Hey guys, welcome to Saw Something Scary. Derek Zoo, Jeff Wright here with you on your midweek fix. We wanted to apologize for not being able to get you guys a show last week, so we figured we'd come in a little bit early this week and hit you with a midweek fix, and this won't be our weekly episode. We'll still come back and do another episode later on this week. That's right. We love you that much. We want to make it up to you. Jeff, what's going on, man? How are you?
I'm doing okay, other than the constant barrage of pollen that's besetting me from every angle. I love the South, man, but oh my gosh, it's hard to breathe.
Yeah. One thing that I don't miss about Tennessee is just the attack of pollen that you get around this time of the year.
It is most definitely an attack, and I am not winning the battle. My Zyrtec has failed me.
Well, man, I hope that you get to feeling better pretty soon, man. I know that stuff is terrible. So
thank you. If I sound more nasally than normal, please forgive me, listeners. I don't like it any better than you do.
I just thought it was a new take.
I guess so. It's a post-nasal drip take.
Yeah, I like it. Hey, so do we call this our 100th episode?
Oh, that's a good question, man. I hadn't thought about it. We'll call this 99.5. How about that?
Okay. All right.
I wish we had a better movie for 100. It seems like It or something should come out in time for us to do this, but that's just not how the horror gods have aligned.
I know. I was trying to figure out a way that we could sandwich in like two other movies, so the 100th episode could have been us.
Yeah. But we'll go back and retroactively add some episodes. That's a good idea, man.
Yeah. So welcome to the 103rd episode of Saw Something Scary. So we'll bring you guys the whole bells and whistles of the 100th episode this week. And maybe we should do like a clip show or something. I don't know. I'm trying to think, because I feel like that we're in a lull right now. Like there's not a good movie to do the 100th episode on. But
yeah, maybe we could do just 99.7 or something, like just until we get to a worthy film. We need to explore this more off air, because I think there's some legs on this one.
That's true. All right, let's get into it, man. No Jeff H. trailers, no horror reporter for this midweek fix. I just want to give you guys some good content. So let's get into it, man. 2019's Pet Sematary. I got to watch it earlier this week. I know that you watched it when it opened. Is that right? Did you do a double feature?
I watched it, I think, the Thursday night it came out. I think that's right. It's been a minute, and my memory's not the best in the world either. But anyway, it was close to release time.
All right, good deal. So let's dive in, man. Wahlberg.
What? No.
Spoiler alert. Wait, Derek, do you think is the best way to talk about this movie kind of going at it on its own merits, or should we compare it to the predecessor? Or, I mean, I guess I'm having a hard time thinking through the right way to start chopping this thing up.
The right way. I like that. Man, I don't really know. I feel like that there was enough changes to this one to just set it up on its own instead of like trying to compare it, because obviously it wasn't. I mean, it's a remake. Okay, let me ask you this question though: do you feel like we needed a remake of Pet Sematary?
That's a really good question that I have not thought of. I think that there's more to do with the story than was done in the original. But having said that, and having now seen this film, I'm not entirely sure the 2019 did it. So it's a good question. I guess I'm okay with it being remade, and I don't hate this movie, but I also feel like we've not got the definitive version of Pet Sematary yet, at least as someone who's read the story. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. When we talked about this in our last episode, when we reviewed the 89 Pet Sematary, you and I both said that we wish that this version of it was going to be more, or would stick to the book more, would be more of an original, or yeah, let me just say that, stick to the script, stick to the book more. And I think that, like, for the first 2/3 of this movie, and I hate that I've been saying that a lot about movies lately, but like for the first 2/3 of the movie, I really enjoyed it. And then when they decided to put their own spin on things, I just, man, I was not a fan. I did not like the Thriller family at the end of the movie.
Well, we haven't talked about this off air, I don't think. But I know we haven't talked about it at length, if we even mentioned it. But I couldn't be with you more there. If anybody follows me on Letterboxd, without trying to give away, you know, I wanted to put a review up, but like, I'm assuming some people want to listen to these episodes. I didn't want to give away my take, but I said, you had me almost all the way, mm-hmm. right up until the ending. And, man, I felt that ending, it just left me, no pun intended, cold. Like I'd been drug out in the woods and buried in a shallow grave.
Yeah, in the shallow, for sure.
Go ahead.
No, you're fine. Go ahead. Hey, it's early in the morning.
We're learning to dance. I don't want to say that there's nothing good about this movie or that the ending ruined it. I think the movie has strengths. I just, having seen the end of this one, I'm like, man, we could have done better. Do better.
Yeah, man. And I think that's the same thing for me. Like, again, going back to the review that we did on the 89 version, you and I both were like, hey, if they do the book ending, we'll be happy. And so I don't know if part of it was I just wanted that book ending because I hated the 89 ending too.
Uh-huh.
You know, I don't know if it just, I just wanted that book ending so much that I worked myself into a shoot, but I was just really, I just did not like it. And I was cool with some of the changes that they made, right? Like I was cool with the little girl being the one who, is killed and brought back. And I guess this is the best time to say this. The little girl who plays Elle was phenomenal.
Incredible, dude. I don't know how to pronounce her first name. Jete? Maybe that's...
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so I guess that's a... I think that's a ballet term because I've heard of a grand jeté.
Mm-hmm.
That's the extent of my ballet knowledge. I know one that ballet exists and there's something called a grand jeté. But anyway, I'm glad I got it right. Jeté Lawrence. Incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. She, I mean, just knocked it out of the park. And, you know, this little girl has a really incredible resume already. She was in Jessica Jones. She was in The Americans. She was in The Snowman, which I know is not a great movie, but still, like, it's pretty cool to be acting, you know, alongside Michael Fassbender at such an early age. Sneaky Pete, which is an Amazon Prime original series with Bryan Cranston and Giovanna Ribisi.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, you know, like, she's up there with these heavy hitters. And... yeah, man, I just thought she did just an amazing job. You know, you feel for the girl all through the movie. Like, you know, she's cute. She's precocious. She's a little girl, right? Like,
yeah.
She's what you hope your little girl will be. And then you feel for this family, you know, when tragedy strikes. And then when she comes back, I was in the theater with only, it was me and one other dude, and we sat as far apart from each other as possible. And so when she comes back and like her little wobbly, wonky eye.
Yeah. That was a good touch, wasn't it?
Yeah. I was just creeped out by her so much in a good way. Just great marks all around. But when, I guess to drive everything back to what we were speaking about earlier, when Jason Clark's character, Lewis, when he goes into the woods and looks like he's about to kill her with that shovel,
yeah.
I was like, ah, dude, you're taking too long. It's game over.
Right.
And, you know, and then he gets harpooned. And then, you know, I just kept waiting on, like, Vincent Price's evil cackle to start. Like, it felt like the new Thriller.
Yeah, I mean, you're exactly capturing the experience of like this movie spiraling out of control, and somebody who is watching it generally enthusiastically realizing, oh my gosh, we're now in free fall off the cliff. That's exactly what it feels like. We need the super cheesy over the top. Yeah. That, you've nailed it, dude. Perfect.
So, and I don't know. I feel like they were bagging on the movie. I genuinely enjoyed the movie. And I would say that I enjoyed the majority of it more than I enjoyed the 89 version. I will say this, though, and you tell me if I'm wrong on this or not, but I did not like John Lithgow as much as I liked Fred Gwynn as Judd.
Yeah, I'm with you now. Having said that, I like John Lithgow's performance. Mm-hmm. If I had never seen Fred Gwynn, I probably would have thought this was perfectly fine. He played, John Lithgow played Judd as more vulnerable, and it was a little bit harder for me to believe that he was this basically country boy. You know, John Lithgow kind of comes off as like city refined, and Fred Gwynn, I thought, embodied like the earthiness of the Midwestern neighbor a little bit better. Mm-hmm. But having said that, I really liked this Judd, and I didn't want to see what happened to him happen. And so I guess that's a success. But if I had to pick, gun to my head, it's not even a question. You know, like out of 100 times, I picked Fred Gwynn 100 times.
Yeah. Yeah, so I was a little disappointed with that, but I mean, not to take away anything that John Lithgow did. You know, John Lithgow's gone. John Lithgow, right? He's one of the most consistent actors of our time. So,
yeah, and I'm sure people who aren't thinking as hard about a B-level horror movie as we are aren't going to care.
Sure,
it's just we just got done watching the original, and it's hard not to make those comparisons. I'll tell you one strength here for the 89 version. I know we talked about how much we compare and not, but I felt like Fred Gwynn came to care for the family more than I felt that Lithgow came to care for Ellie, if that mm-hmm. makes sense. Like, I feel like Fred Gwynn communicated, hey, I've adopted these people, and my care for them is going to lead me to make a dumb decision. More than, you know, Lithgow says that Ellie captured his heart in a way nobody has in years or something like that. There's a line of dialogue. Mm-hmm. And the only interaction he's really had with her is she broke into his house and he came over and had dinner. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I don't feel like they took enough time for me to really believe that he would be willing to trespass the barrier on their behalf. Mm-hmm. Which is a small quibble, I guess, but it was a little bit of a hole for me.
Yeah, no, I actually completely agree with that. And I think one of the hindrances of this movie compared to the 89 version is this. The 89 version felt like it took its time getting to the zombies, right? Uh-huh. Like, you got to know this family. You got to know their backstory. You felt more invested in this family. You cared more about this family. Judd, as an outsider looking in and essentially being the eyes of the viewer with this family, you know, mm-hmm. falls in love with the family in the same way. This version of the story feels like, hey, we got to get to the zombies quick.
Sure. And to its credit, it spends more time with like the mythology, which I tend to like.
Sure.
I just didn't. It ended up not being a good trade for roping me in.
Well, and I don't think that that is the key to this movie, right? Like, I think that, again, like, family drama is the key to this movie. You know, like, you've got to learn to love these characters so that you can feel the loss and the heartache just as much as they do.
Yeah,
that's true. And we don't get that in this. You know, one of the things, it's cheesy and it's over the top, but one of the pivotal moments of the movie, in the 89 movie, is where the father-in-law confronts Lewis at the funeral. Mm-hmm. And watching it in the 89 version, I kind of chuckled because I was like, man, that's soap opera level acting right there.
Sure.
But not having it in this version, it took it away for me. Because you see, like, the father-in-law give him, like, evil looks.
Yeah.
But nothing's ever said about it.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I feel like that when you sacrifice those character-building moments for, we got to get to the zombies, it's not a good trade. I'm with you with the mythology stuff, and I kind of wish that they would have went into it a little bit more. But just to sacrifice it for, hey, jump scare. Like with Zelda,
Yeah.
Where, you know, you're genuinely terrified of this person laying in the bed with spinal meningitis. And then as she chokes and dies, you're there and you feel that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And instead in this one, it's, oh, she fell down a dumb waiter and we get to see her all mangled up. Like,
yeah. So I'm glad you brought that up. We talked about in the 89 review, I think we've referenced it on multiple episodes that Zelda from 89 is a lasting scare.
Mm-hmm.
But it's basically her in the bed. That's the scary part. In this movie, I thought they did a really good job of like showing you a little bit of what would freak a young girl out about her sick sister.
Yeah.
But then they just kept on. And I thought when she fell down the dumbwaiter, I was like, guys, come on.
Yeah.
Like, this is too far. It leaves something to the imagination. Leave something to, I mean, just the idea of as a young girl, I'm left alone at home to care for my dying sister when she dies. That is plenty enough to set up the idea that this woman is deeply uncomfortable with the subject of death.
Mm-hmm.
When you add the dumbwaiter stuff, I thought this movie did a good job with being kind of scary. I didn't feel disappointed in the scares it offered, but that one was just so far over the top. It completely removed the scare, and I was left thinking about the decision rather than being scared.
Yeah. Yeah, it really was, I think, the only time in the movie where I rolled my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and again,
it's, well, until the ending, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But again, you know, that's one of those things where you and I just watched the other one. And, you know, I doubt that your regular viewers are, you know, going to do anything like that. You know,
sure.
Most people are going to see that as a jump scare. It's going to scare them for a second. They're going to have that brevity of laughter and then go on about their business. You know, they don't nitpick things to death like you and I do.
Well, if I can maybe continue the belly aching and get it out of my system. I mean, everybody who listens to our show regularly knows I don't watch trailers and I do everything I can to stay away from any details of the plot. So I did that with this movie. And yet, as a guy who didn't see a trailer, didn't read anything about it, I knew the switch that, you know, the Gage was not going to die. It was Ellie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how, but just through osmosis. If that detail hadn't been leaked out, I think this movie would have lingered with me longer. Because watching it, you know, watching the birthday party play out and then the scene where Ellie gets taken out, if I didn't know that it was going to be Ellie who dies, you know, they show Gage running to the road.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would have been set up to have that kind of hit me like a swerve. And I think it would have made me, I don't want to say value this movie more, but I would have been more impressed with the storytelling.
Yeah.
But the fact that came out, you're just sitting there being like, oh, that's a feint. Cool. You know what I mean? Like, again, mm-hmm. you're not being scared or being disturbed. You're sitting back thinking about the choice to release the information. And again, not to get on my soapbox, I've said it 1,000 times, but we really just don't need that kind of stuff coming out in trailers. Give us 2 or 3 scenes, an audio clip, and quit, because you're just throwing away your movies at this point, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw that the director of Avengers Endgame has like come out and publicly begged people to not release spoilers.
Well, you know why, right?
Well, tell me.
They did a special screening of it in South Korea. Someone filmed it and put it online.
See, guys, come on. Like,
yeah.
Don't release trailers that give away the goods. Don't have special screenings and then expect the rest of us to like make up for you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like quit taking a dump on your own movies.
Yeah.
Now I'll tell you this. You can tell me if I'm too far on this, but Ellie makes me think of my daughter, little brunette girl, upturned nose, loves to dance ballet stuff. I've got 2 girls that love to dance ballet. And so it was very easy for me to get into the emotions of the scene with her dying and why dad would think about bringing her back and all those things. But the fact I knew it was coming reduced it. Even as a guy who's like particularly inclined to feel the weight of this,
mm-hmm.
I think they would just be so much better served to like show us the cemetery sign, maybe show us the Wyatt cult kids in the masks and, give us a Wendigo howl, and we're good, man. We're good. Mm-hmm. We know enough about the movie at that point to decide if we want to watch it or not. It's just frustrating. I don't have the emotional energy to like truly go off on it, but again, it's just taking a dump on your own movie.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, I don't know why you would zig and then zag and decide to put that in the trailer. I know that's what you've been saying, but it's just,
that's the perfect summary though. That's exactly what they did.
It makes no sense to me. And I even for a minute tensed up when Gage started running towards the road.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went, oh yeah, that's not what happens here.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, well, obviously, but I don't know, man. I think that a lot of people, or I think that the people behind this movie thought, it's been 30 years. We're going to see, you know, there's going to be a new viewing audience that's going to see this that may not have any knowledge of King's novel or may not have seen the 89 movie. And so we can kind of go in this direction. And if we put this thing in for Gage, people are going to, you know, the old school people are going to brace themselves for impact. And the new school people are too. And we just kind of get away with it. And I don't know. To me, that's lazy storytelling.
I'm with you. Why do you care enough to try to mix it up and then give it away?
Yeah.
But I think that until we talk about the end, that's the last complaint I have. I thought two strengths since I have been bellyaching. I didn't think Amy Siemens had much to do in this movie. You know, I could take or leave her.
Mm-hmm.
But man, I really like Jason Clarke. That guy's got real legit chops.
Yeah. Can I say this, though? I thought that Jason Clarke was the perfect person for a quote-unquote zombie movie because he always looks like he's sick.
Man, that's true. He's got, like, circles under his eyes and dark back. Yeah, that's true.
And he's just real – he always looks real clammy. Like, in everything I've ever seen him in, he just looks clammy.
That's really well said, dude. He's one of those dudes with, like, the perpetual 5 o'clock shadow, and on him it looks like he's just haggard.
Yeah.
Did you see Mudbound in 2017 or 18?
Mudbound and Down, the Kenny Powers story?
No, not that one.
No, I didn't.
It's a movie about the Deep South around, I guess, the turn of the century. And it deals with racism and family dynamics, and I really don't know how to put my hand on it, but it's a period piece that's looking at life in the South for sharecroppers and black people in the same community.
Okay,
it's really good, really, really, really good, and I think it and this movie, because I never saw Zero Dark Thirty, but those two have really convinced me that. That Jason Clarke is a leading man as a dramatic actor. I don't know if he could carry like an action franchise, mm-hmm. but I think he can hold his own as a dramatic actor with about anybody after having seen these two.
Well, we've already seen him try to be an action star, and that didn't work out too well.
Yeah, I wonder about if that's his fault or if that's the material he's working with. The Terminator franchise just gone to a black place. I mean, it's basically the Terminator franchise went to where Skynet became self-conscious.
You know? Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of hard to do a science fiction story when things are starting to come true.
That's a good point as well.
He was in – what was the – I mean, dude's been working out for 24 years. I had no idea that he had been around that long.
Mm-hmm.
But he was in Lawless, right?
Yes. Yeah. Now, he had a small part. He basically played the big bruiser brother in Lawless. Mm-hmm. The one that I think he did that I'd forgotten about, but looking through his IMDb page here, that is another really good movie, is Chappaquiddick. Did you happen to catch that?
No, I did not.
He plays Ted Kennedy in the defining controversy of Ted Kennedy's life.
Okay.
And no, you know, not to give spoilers away, and I don't, you know, I'm not pushing for people to have a particular political read, but the movie Ed Helm is in it as well, and the movie plays Ted Kennedy is this guy who's being pulled by dark political ambitions versus Ed Helms' integrity.
Mm-hmm.
And he plays a Ted Kennedy who chooses to sell out to those dark political forces. And yet again, I would tell you it's well worth watching.
Okay.
And I think it and Mudbound are both on Netflix. The next time you want to watch a drama, flip a coin and watch one of those, and I bet you won't be disappointed.
Cool. I'll do that. I thought that he had a great little turn in Gatsby.
See, I never watched it because I'm like, as much as I love American literature, I can't get into The Great Gatsby.
Yeah.
600 people have tried to help me do it. I can't get into it, and so I didn't even watch the movie.
Gatsby's one of my favorite books.
So, really?
Yeah. So I hate to hear that, but I understand. And that, not to pull away from the main focus of what we're talking about here, but it's funny you say that because Gatsby is one of those novels that you either love it or you can't get into it at all.
Yeah, I have tried. And I even think it's kind of a Breaking Bad story of like a guy who, you know, he gave himself over to these ambitions and was ruined for it. Like, I tend to enjoy reading those kind of tragedies, but I've had multiple people, and I just can't do it. I can't love that book.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Well, that's sad, but I do understand. You're not the only person, so.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, I'm just going to say another positive about this is that while this isn't the scariest movie I've seen this year or maybe even this month, I really found the little girl attacking Judd, particularly as she switched into Judd's dead wife.
Mm-hmm.
I found that pretty disturbing. Again, maybe it's because I can look at that little actress and say, oh, that's my daughter. But I thought this movie, you know, all things considered, did a fair job of being creepy and scary. I'm not disappointed in having watched it, trying to get a horror fix.
Yeah.
Any pushback on that, or do you agree?
No. I think that this movie was a step above the original, but I think that it still falls into, and I don't want to give away my hand already, but I feel like that it falls into perfectly acceptable horror. Like I said, like I enjoyed the first two thirds of this movie, and was really, I was there, you know, like I was in it. I was for the ride. I was having fun with these characters. And you know, I think that the actors bringing them to life helped that as well. I real quick before I forget, did you know that Amy, what's her last name?
Siemens. Yeah. Something like that.
Did you know that she is a director and was Marvel's first choice to direct Captain Marvel?
No, I had no idea. I'm really not that familiar with her work at all.
Yeah. And she apparently turned that down to be in this movie.
Oh, no. Amy, honey, I'm so sorry. Can we get somebody to watch her? She needs to be under constant surveillance because she may hurt herself.
The crazy part about it is apparently she met with Marvel, didn't feel, I don't know the entire story, but just what I'm getting, didn't feel like it was a good fit, and then went and did. So Amy submits, I apologize for jacking her name up, explains saying no to directing Black Widow. Black Widow, not Captain Marvel.
I apologize. Oh, okay. I was going to say, like, Captain Marvel has made $1 billion at this point.
Yeah.
That would be hard to take. But maybe Black, I don't know. I have ambitions for Black Widow, but we at least don't know that it's going to be a $1 billion movie at this point.
Yeah. She said that it's not really her voice, so that's why she turned it down.
Yeah, well, hey, kudos to her for having integrity. I'm sure that the Marvel paycheck is a pretty big carrot, you know, to have to stare down and say no to. So kudos to her for integrity as an artist.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I guess less of a suicide watch than Captain Marvel would have been.
Yeah, that would be tough. And true story is, if you know, if Black Widow goes on to make a billion, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough on her. You know, having seen what this movie did, it's just been a rough. It's been a rough week or so at the box office for Hollywood outside of Shazam, and so I can't imagine that, knowing the return, she won't have some second guesses if Black Widow does well.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of Shazam, I know we were going all over the place on this, but speaking of Shazam, when's the next Shazam cast coming out?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. I don't know if I can, you know, having had you on as a guest, I'm not sure where to go from there. It's like I've peaked. And,
that's flattering, but inaccurate.
I don't even know who painted the Mona Lisa, but I was going to say, did Da Vinci, did he paint again after the Mona Lisa? I can't imagine so.
He did, but with less successful results.
Oh, gotcha. I'll probably just have a gripe about Jeff Johns episode at some point. I can rant about that like Adam Carolla for 30 minutes.
I look forward to it. And if you're interested in hearing mine and Jeff's take on the Shazam movie, go download the Shazam cast. It's a real fun. It's exactly like this episode of Saw Something Scary, where we go down 47 rabbit holes and talk about the movie for about 15 minutes.
Was there anything?
But download it today.
Yeah, for sure. It's available on all the places you get your podcasts. Was there anything else about this movie that stood out to you as particularly scary?
No, you know what, man? I'll tell you, I was another thing I was disappointed in. Which, again, seems weird because I really did enjoy the first two-thirds of this movie. But another thing I was disappointed in was I wanted more of the creepy kids.
Yeah. I thought they mishandled. I mean, I said I was done bellyaching. I really thought they mishandled that.
Yeah.
When Ellie and her mom are in their backyard, and again, they see the Wyatt family parade going through their backyard, they're like, oh, look, interesting, local culture. Nobody sees that for the first time unexpectedly and thinks, oh, how neat.
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. We're hand in hand right now. I felt the exact same way. I was like, I would tell my husband, hey, it's time to move.
For sure. Or we're building a blockade, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you got to find a new route to the pet cemetery if you're coming through here in the sheep mask.
Yeah. Or burn the pet cemetery.
But, you know, I guess in my mind, it'd be cool to have something like a pet cemetery in the town. But at one point, somebody's looking through a scrapbook and, like, people are wearing those masks generations back. Like, you're kind of burying the lead here, man. Something's happening in this town. If you're gonna give us that information, you need to explain why the town is comfortable with these, you know, modern day plague masks. And Eric Rowan leading the charge to bury Snuffles the cat. I either need more done with that or I need less. I can't have what they did in this
right. Way. Yeah. Did you notice that they weren't far from Derry, though? Yeah.
Yeah, when she's stuck in the when mom is trying to get back to the family and she's stuck in the traffic jam. Mm-hmm. I watched it with friend of the podcast, Mac Williams and Jared Moore. And I was like, hey, look, dude, Derry. It was pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I audibly squealed in the theater and got shushed for it. So
by the one other guy in there.
By the one other guy in there.
Yeah. He's like, it's just me and you, man. You got to hold the rope.
But yeah, To go back to the original thing, I felt like that there was so much left on the table with those little kids. And, like, you talk about being scary. Like, that was what originally drew me to the thing in the first place, was like, oh, those kids are creepy as crap. I can't wait to see what they're going to do with that. And then, you know, psych your mind. Like, there was nothing that happened with it. And that was frustrating.
Yeah. They left. They either left something on the table or should have never put it up there in the first place.
Yeah.
I also thought that they were over the top with the cat. You know, at least in the 89 version, Church eventually comes to look like a normal cat again.
Right.
Church in this one looks like he's been on a 7-day bender for the rest of his undead life. No, nobody's going to respond well to that cat. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I guess it's a cool detail that he's the agent of Ellie's destruction, and sort of makes him more sinister and feeds the like the idea that there's a spirit in the pet cemetery that's, I don't know, demonic or whatever. But again, the cat's wild hairdo, it just took me out of it too much.
Yeah.
So it's amazing you can get evil cats as easily as you can. Apparently there's a store in Hollywood for that. Mm-hmm. But they needed to give him a different hairstyle and dialed it down just a little bit for me to believe that the girl would want him to be in her life still.
Yeah. And did you know that it took like 5 cats to do that whole thing?
No, I didn't. I'm not surprised. I'm assuming cats are divas on the set, so.
Easy. We don't need strongly worded emails and tweets and Facebook posts coming our way.
Yeah, I can't help it, man. I'm not a cat fan. Sorry, Allison.
There it is. I noticed that as I was leaving, I watched the, I was looking at some of the credits because obviously there were a lot of people in this movie, so it wasn't like, there's going to be a ton. It's not a Marvel movie, right? So
the cat got all 5 cats got a credit.
Yeah,
that's the best. That's just the best.
Yeah, it was. It was like Fluffy and Toby and
these Doc are the details I needed. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I'm looking it up right now. We got Leo, Tonic, Jaeger. That is a frat cat, by the way. Whoever named their cat Jaeger is it's like Alpha Chi Omega.
Jaeger got his start in Van Wilder.
I can't believe 4 cats got a credit. That's so
funny. Isn't that crazy?
I don't know why that's funny to me. It probably shouldn't be funny to me, but that's really funny to me.
Yeah.
Let me tell you who I do not want to be on a Hollywood set. I don't want to be the cat wrangler.
Right.
That's funny.
Yeah. Did you mention JD on that too? JD, yeah. Jaeger, Tonic, and Leo?
Yep. Yeah. Jaeger and Tonic, I'm assuming, are maybe owned by the same, like that one of them is his cat and the other is her cat or something in a some kind of dating relationship or marriage.
Yeah, they got married right out of college. He was in, I don't know, fraternities or sororities. I was going to make something up, but he was in I Felt a Thigh.
This is the spinoff we need coming out of Pet Cemetery. The church cat cult.
I love it.
I think we've done all we can to avoid talking about the ending, but.
Well, hey, real quick, let's talk about this. How did you like the Victor Pascal scene?
I like this version better than the comedic stuff from I think I told you, I watched a fan edit of the 89 version where they tried to dial it down some.
Mm-hmm.
The comedic stuff with him. I think the 2019 made the right decision. I can't remember how they play him in the book, but that's not a comedic relief thing. We don't need like the goofiness or ironic nature of a ghost that's delivering quips.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought the cat, oh my gosh, it's in my brain now. Get out of my brain, Jaeger. I thought the guy who played him and what they gave him to do was much more effective.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought so as well. And to me, like, that scene stands out as one of the better scenes in the movie.
When he sets up in the clinic?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, and for whatever reason, it's not as easy for me to think of him as Massive Head Wound Harry because it didn't seem as, like, over the top and silly.
Yeah.
As the 89 version, which, considering the dumbwaiter scene and how crazy Cat Church looked, kudos to this film for at least one time dialing it down just a little bit.
Yeah. I agree. All right, man. Let's talk about that ending.
What are we supposed to think about in the ending of this movie? Are they going to eat the kid? Are they going to kill him and bury him? Is this now the Addams Family Values movie? I don't understand what they wanted me to feel at the end of the film.
I feel like that they... Well, I think that they kind of set it up. You know, he's standing over Elle's body saying, I just wanted us to be a family again. And she almost reverts back into her childlike state and says, we can be, Daddy.
Uh-huh.
And then he gets impaled by a weather vane of all... ridiculousness.
As you do.
Right. Suck it. he gets dragged into the pet cemetery. He comes back and they're going after Gage so that they can be a family again.
Why does the undead demonic presence that's reanimating their bodies want them to be a family?
I don't know.
What are they going to do? Are they going to become like, are they just going to start rolling their neighbors' yards and stuff, or basically create a whole town full of undead people? I just thought, like, that's one of those deals where I think there had to be a production meeting where they're like, you know what would be really cool? If, like, they end up as an undead family, and you're like, somebody should have said, yeah, but where do we go from there? Like,
yeah.
I think what they wanted is for us to feel disturbed. You know what I mean? Like, oh, no, mm-hmm. something unnatural is happening here. But I couldn't help but think, like, how are they going to live this out? They're obviously undead. Nobody knows. Judd's dead. What do they do from here?
Yeah.
Are they going to get an RV and travel the country? I really don't understand.
They're just going to be like Beetlejuice.
I guess so, but just awful.
Yeah.
So I think that was an attempt to go for the gusto that would have been just, as we said at the beginning of the episode, it'd just been better served to use the book ending. The mm-hmm. best version of this movie is yet to be made, and it just ends the way the story ends.
Yeah. Yeah, man, I honestly, it took me completely out of the movie. Like, I was on board and really enjoying it, and then, you know, I really don't have words to describe how, I don't necessarily think I was upset about it, but I don't have the right verbiage to, like, express myself about it.
Well, you may not agree with me on this, but the one that I've been telling people is it's just goofy.
Yeah.
It took a movie that I think had some legitimate scares in it and that just in general was a creepy tale, and it turned it into the Addams Family Values. And I don't know, man, there just needs to be a director's cut with an alternative ending to this thing.
Yeah. And I hope that there is, cause I would like for there to be something, besides, oh, this is what we thought. We're trying to be edgy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because they didn't. It comes off hokey and idiotic, in my opinion.
It's just silly. And I mean, I guess we're getting ahead of, like, our final reviews. You got to where I'm at on this already when you said perfectly acceptable. Or mm-hmm. if they'd have done something even slightly more acceptable with the ending, I would have said above average.
Yeah, I was going into this. In the final stretch going, oh, this is like a 7.5 movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then when that happened, I was like, oh, I'm done.
Sure. Beep. You know, it just falls right off. I hear you.
Just do better, Hollywood. That's all I'm asking.
Or just give Derek or I a call and be like, hey, broad strokes, here's what we're wanting to do. We'll let you know. Hey. You need to go back to the drawing board on that last one there, bud.
Yeah, we'll take it to the Facebook group. They'll vote on it.
There you go. We have a finely curated collection of the best horror minds out there. We'll give you access.
That's right. We have the tools.
We can rebuild your movie.
We can rebuild it.
Yeah. Well, so, Derek, scale of 1 to 10?
I think I go 6.5, man.
Would you?
Yeah.
I'm going to give this a perfect 5.
Okay.
So what pushed you 1.5 up from perfectly acceptable?
Oh, I think that it drops. The ending of it drops. Like I said, I was ready to give this a 6, or excuse me, I was ready to give this a 7.5 score. I think the rating drops it, but I really enjoyed the acting in this movie. I thought that there were... we didn't spend a lot of time focusing on, like, the positives of the movie, but I really felt like that every actor was better than, with the exception of John Lithgow, every actor was better than its counterpart of the '89 movie.
Okay, that's fair.
And not to say that John Lithgow is not good, because he is. He does a really, really good job with this movie. And, you know, I think that you and I said it before, if you're not going to get Fred Gwynn, if you're not going to put Fred Gwynn in the pet cemetery and bring him back to do this movie, then John Lithgow would be like the only other actor I think that could pull it off.
Mm-hmm.
And he does in his own Lithgowian way.
Sure.
And, you know, I was enjoying the ride up until Jason Clark gets killed and they Thriller drag him into the pet cemetery. And then by that point, I was like, okay, this isn't what I want. So I was upset about that because clearly it's all about me. And then from there, with the ambiguous ending with the little boy, I just, you know, you and I talk about it all the time. Like, I want to go to the movies to escape and have fun, and, you know, and feel good. And so it really sucks when you don't get that.
I'm with you. If I could have been with you in your score, you know, even with the Zelda falling down the dumbwaiter thing, even with punk rock church, Wyatt family cult, you know, I could overlook those and just say that I'm happy that a movie is trying to be scary and creepy.
Right.
And like the horror uncle in me can say, hey, thanks for trying to give me a good, you know, a good scare. That ending though, man, I think this sounds so hipster or elitist or whatever, but like, I think this is the epitome of perfectly acceptable horror. Somebody who wants to take a date to a scary movie, so there's some cuddle time. Somebody who just, you know, is looking for on a rainy night something to watch to get, you know, a case of the willies for a little bit. That's cool. This movie could have just been so much more. And like, I basically think it lands the same way the 89 one did. Maybe one degree higher because of production values and better acting, but I'm just left being frustrated that it's so obvious a really good version of this film could be made and we didn't get it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess at the end of the day, the book's always going to be better.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, and even in 2019, when you have millions of dollars in a budget and you have phenomenal acting talent and you have great effects and, you know, and all the things that we have at our disposal, it's just not, it's just never going to beat the book. So
that's true. To its credit, did we see something scary?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think that there's enough in this that creeped me out. I don't know if I'd say scary in the general sense, but like, you know, this, okay, let's say this. This movie does a great job in a over-the-top sense, but it does a great job of discussing macabre things that a lot of times we don't want to bring up.
Yeah. And they embody that in The Wife, right?
Yeah. And, you know, there are a lot of people, I would say, I haven't done research on this, so I don't know, but I would say that a lot of people's number one fear is death.
Sure.
And so you're really trying to play on those emotions in this movie. And I think for, again, for two-thirds of the movie, they do a great job with it. And this movie raises a lot of questions that are hard to answer. You know, I myself am not a father, but, you know, who doesn't feel for Lewis in that moment when, number one, you brought the cat back.
Sure.
Number two, you set the cat free instead of doing the right thing.
Yes, 100%. Sorry again, Allison, but yeah.
Yeah, which leads to, you know, your daughter dying. I mean, it's, you know, it's a boomerang effect that, you know, leads to the death of your daughter. Number four, you're overcome with all that grief. So then you know, you do the thing that you know you shouldn't do. But you're thinking, man, I got to have her back. We got to, you know, I've got to make this right. And, you know, and then you look at it from, I look at it from my own perspective and I go, hey, if I had a supernatural
backyard
Lazarus pit
yeah, in my backyard, good reference.
Would I think about doing the same thing? Not only with that, I think that to your average horror movie fan, you're going to get some jump scares. You're going to get some things that are going to, go bump in the night. That's going to jolt you for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Hey man, I'll tell you what got me was that freaking truck at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
Like when it comes barreling down the highway with nothing, you have those senses of like, oh, this is about to happen. That got me. And so, thank you for coming to my TED Talk. I think, the first two thirds of the movie are scary or have moments of fright in them.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm going to specifically call attention to Jete Lawrence. I think this movie isn't scary without her work.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think as a testament to the writers, the whole setup with Ellie Font, the great and terrible, moving from something that, a cute thing a family says to each other to something sinister, an undead child delivers as a line. I thought that really worked. I thought she did a good job being a stalking menace. I'm assuming that there was stunt actors involved and whatnot when she's stalking Judd down to kill him, but before she becomes his undead wife, she's still pretty scary.
Yeah.
And the thing that really works for me is the maniacal dance she was doing in the living room, breaking stuff,
mm-hmm.
as a way to indicate that this is not what we buried. The girl here is not what we put in the ground.
Yeah.
I don't think we ever talked about it, but there was a Chloe Grace Moretz movie a while back about this crazy old woman who stalked Chloe Grace Moretz's character.
Yeah, Greta.
Greta, that's right. The only time in Greta that I felt anything of appreciation was when Greta was dancing around her apartment like a crazy person when she had just attacked one of the victims.
Mm-hmm.
And in the same way, they use dance here very effectively to make it creepy. And so In an episode where we've done quite a bit of complaining, or I've done quite a bit of complaining, hey, kudos. The Ellie Font thing was really good, and the dancing was really good, and Jete Lawrence was really good. So I'll tip my cap to that.
Yeah. All right, man. I think that pretty much wraps up Pet Cemetery.
Yeah. So we've got a movie that we've got brewing for our next episode. And after that, Derek, I think The Curse of La Llorona should be on the docket.
Yeah, man, that opens, depending on when you listen to this, that opens on Thursday, so tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we need to hop into the cinemas and watch La Llorona before I don't watch anything but The Avengers, because that's coming up.
That's all America will care about.
Yeah. For sure. The reason I brought up that Avengers leak is because I was on Twitter and some person who I no longer follow posted it, and I saw like 30 seconds of it because they just had videos play now.
My gosh.
And I was like, oh, cool. A new trailer. Oh, nope. That's not what I wanted to see. Okay. Good deal.
How did the internet manage to get worse? I don't understand.
People, my man.
Yeah.
People. That's just how it goes.
You can't program the user out,
Right. But you can block him.
That's true. So that's true.
I blocked and muted everything that has to do with the Avengers on all my social media, and I feel a lot better about it.
That is the right approach, brother.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, we'll guys, again, sorry about last week. We apologize for not being able to get in. I hope that this quenches your thirst for the time being, and we will be back later on this week with a whole new episode of Saw Something Scary. In the meantime, in between time, he's at Right Jeff. I'm at Derek Zoo. We're at We Saw Something Scary on Facebook, and our Twitter account is Scary Podcast. So get at us however you see fit. And we'll be back later on this week with a brand new episode. Jeff, anything else?
No, man. Appreciate y'all listening. Derek, appreciate the conversation, bud.
Yeah, man. Always a pleasure. Guys, we'll be back soon. Till then, remember to avoid clowns in sewers, white people teacups, black men with turkey basters, and families with supernatural Lazarus pits in their backyards. See you guys real soon. Bye-bye, man.